Hello and welcome to the opening bell. My name is Matt Christie.
My editor, name's John Denham.
John Denham, online editor.
I think I need a catchphrase.
Maybe we can work on that over the next half an hour or so.
Yeah?
If anything sounds particularly catchy and phrasey, I'll let you know and stick with it. But the last time, it's been a few weeks, hasn't it, since we've last done one of these?
2 weeks, but two magical
weeks.
Was
it 2 weeks? It was just in the... Oh, it was. We'd just been to the weigh-in, had we, for Joshua?
Yeah, so we were previewing the Joshua fight.
Okay, so...
Last time we spoke. Well, I mean, we've spoken since.
We have spoken since then. Okay, so yeah, that does seem like more than 2 weeks ago, but...
So much
wasn't much
since.
Of a fight in the end, was it?
No, Anthony Joshua just sidled in, took him out, sidled off with the world title. He made it look so easy.
Was it easy? There has been mixed reaction. People fall into two camps. One, Joshua is sensational and he's about to take over the world. The other is Charles Martin is awful and he had no business being a world champion. I think I fall in the middle.
Yeah,
somewhere.
But as always, I think you're right, because I think you can say Joshua's very good and Martin's challenge was poor, very poor. Because I thought Joshua, I know it only went two rounds, but you know, compared to how he fought against Dylan White, where everything was sort of frantic in a rush, entertaining, but frantic in a rush, against Martin, Joshua, he was up on his feet, moving, sharp, accurate, hard punches. So he did look good. I was just very surprised. I did think Martin would have a better go at him than he did.
Joshua did exactly what he was supposed to do. Do you think the occasion, it sent? I touched on it a little bit in the report afterwards. I thought the occasion was getting to Charles Martin before the fight, in the week leading up to the fight, and then more so on the fight itself, on the night itself.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a hell of a din, wasn't there, for Anthony Joshua.
The atmosphere is something else. Like, there's nothing that's prepared Martin for that. He's been on some biggish shows in America, but on the undercard with no one really paying attention to him.
He wouldn't have experienced anything like that. It's funny, I was listening to something earlier on while I was preparing some stuff for a future project we've got going on regarding Khan and Canelo, and there was an American journalist there, and he was talking about quite an experienced American journalist. He'd been, his first experience in a British ring was, of watching a fight in a British ring was at Frampton and Quigg, and he just said the atmosphere was sensational. Joshua Martin was similar, so yeah, he would have been so stunned, Charles Martin, and wondering what on earth he was letting himself in for as he was making his way to the ring, wouldn't he?
Yeah, and I think that all that came through in the performance. You observed in your report how he didn't even seem decisive about how to get into the ring,
yeah.
Like stepping over the ropes or stepping through them. And I think, you know, and the crowd can really get to you. It takes some getting used to. His performance during the bout, it was like, fine, if you're going to run away, then, you know, from Joshua, then run for it properly and take him into the later rounds, sort of take some of the sting out of the fight. Or if you're going to attack him. It seemed like Martin stayed away from him for the first round and then sort of half-heartedly lunged forward when he hadn't really, you know, decided what he was doing, lunged onto a punch and got taken out.
It was tactically naive, wasn't it?
Yeah, it wasn't clear what the tactics were.
Yeah,
you know, and maybe that got lost in the roar of the crowd. But all week he'd seemed a bit of, you know, his character was kind of hard to read in the build-up. Like one minute he'd say one thing, another minute he'd say another thing. It didn't seem like he would sort of decided who he wanted to be.
You liked his shorts, though, didn't you? His rather tight leather shorts.
We've all got a pair of tight leather shorts at home. It was the crown that more... You know what? He kept that big crown on his head quite well whilst he was walking
struggling
about
through the ropes.
Yeah.
Or over
so he's
them.
Got good posture.
Well, you could say that. So, Charles Martin, I mean, a lot of the talk is what's next for Anthony Joshua. Do we expect to hear from Charles Martin again in the upper levels of the heavyweight division. He has mentioned since that he's going to go back and rebuild. It's one heck of a rebuilding job he's got ahead of him, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a huge rebuilding job. You know, he's got a lot of work to do to... You know, he looked sort of promising during the Glasgow fight, but his stock has really fallen. He's really got... He's going to have to work very hard to get himself back up to that level. And, you know, but even before the fight, he was talking how he wanted to get in, fight everyone, you know, fight the best guy, and then get out again. You know, he does, he's been paid well, and he's going to have the hunger to really get back up to the top 10.
I'd be surprised.
Yeah, exactly. I can't predict it. I don't know what's going on in his mind, but I would be surprised if he made it back.
There was talk immediately before the fight, it was announced that the Vladimir Klitschko Tyson Fury rematch would take place in Manchester on July 9. In the immediate aftermath, Eddie Hearn suggested that Anthony Joshua's next defence may take place at Wembley on July 9. That's since been changed to June 25th at the O2 Arena, which some people have suggested may have been the plan all along. But we don't know who the challenger is going to be. It's going to be too early for the winner of Takam
and Joseph Parker.
Because
they're fighting end of May, or May 21, I think.
There's been quite a few names mentioned. Malik Scott, some people have said, is the most likely recently. But who do you think it's going to be? None of them, and if we're honest, none of them are overly inspiring,
no,
are they?
None of them are... None of them are exactly Tyson Fury, are they? But so we have a long list of people like Bermain Stiverne, the winner of Takam, Joseph Parker, people like that. I think it's being whittled down now. There's sort of three names floating about. So I think Bermain Stiverne has dropped out of the IBF top 10 or top 15 in their latest ratings, which is a shame because, you know, Stiverne, former WBC heavyweight champion,
durable, tough guy.
He'd have been probably a good person for a first defence. Like, that's a tough fight, really, for someone who's only had 16 bouts, or 16 pro bouts. But with him out the way, there is Eric Molina, the guy who went a few rounds with Deontay Wilder and recently...
beat Adamek.
Yeah, knocked out Adamek. He's sort of American. He's a Mexican American, and they're trying to get on UST, you know, get on regularly on US TV. So he's got that appeal. There is Johan de Halpas, another guy who went a few rounds, you know, did better than expected against Deontay Wilder, and has got a knockout win recently over Robert Hellenius, former European champion.
Yeah.
But he's not. He's not called the potato, as I like to call him. He's a fat court. What is his name? Like the snake or something?
Something like that, yeah.
Anyway, I digress. But also, there is Dominic Brazil, if I'm pronouncing his name right, who is American. So you got that from American TV. He's unbeaten in 17 or so fights. He's got a few knockouts somehow. He's not very good, and we don't want
that though, do we?
I think it's
probably... surely we don't want that again.
I think it probably will be him. That would be my guess, because if that shortlist of those three guys, Brazil is probably the worst of them, but with the best record on paper, and he's fractionally taller than Joshua. How does Joshua deal with a tall opponent?
Not down with it.
I'm just saying that's what's going to happen, in my opinion.
I'm not down with it.
My hunch.
He's even worse than Charles Martin, isn't he, on paper?
They weren't meant to fight each other, Brazil and Martin, weren't they?
Pardon?
before Martin got his world title shot, he was meant to fight Brazil. That's just, you know, that's just my guess, though.
Right, okay.
It's probably going to happen.
Well, I hope it doesn't. I hope it doesn't.
But I can see the argument on paper in that Josh is fighting relatively soon after that fight, so it's probably not going to be anyone that amazing.
No, I'd just like to see someone that was kind of proven that would be that bit of proven toughness.
Exactly. You need like, I'd rather have that. Chisora.
I'd rather have that. And someone that's kind of fought, even if they haven't necessarily won at the top level, at least they've experienced it before.
Yeah.
You could make the argument that that Charles Martin hadn't, and it was all too much for him. And you could make a very strong argument that it could happen all over again.
But then this is like, you know, given the sort of goodwill around Joshua at the moment, if they want him to, you know, if they're trying to get towards that 20-fight mark, they want him to have one more easy fight before he gets in with, you know, the winner of Joseph Parker, Carlos Takam.
That's fine. Fight. That's a good fight. Yeah.
But that's that. You know, if they do an easy, you know, an easy defense now, winner of Joseph, winner of that Parker Takam, then he's got to go in with the top people, but.
Okay.
It just seems to sort of, there's a logic to that. Route.
No, I know. And I think we can kind of, you know, want too much, and we can kind of demand too much. And we always said that the kind of the beauty of taking the Charles Martin fight was that there would be these kind of fights waiting for him. But I'm not sure what I would like to see, at risk of kind of repeating myself, is that I would like to see him further his education, and I don't think someone like Brazil could do that. But anyway,
I'm sure he'll beat Brazil quickly and easily. Yeah. But it's just, you can say Brazil, you know, he was the USA's 2012 Olympian, so he's a sort of best America's. You know, on that ground, you can say he's the best American heavyweight prospect at the moment.
Okay. On that same night, later on, I got back just in time to watch Manny Pacquiao's supposed last fight, and I was pleasantly surprised to see that he's still got a bit of form in those old
still
legs.
Still got it.
And I mean, for the first, I think it was the first three rounds, and I was at home, and I was drinking a few beers while I was watching it.
You always are, Matt.
But for the first three rounds, I thought, oh no, Pacquiao could lose every round here. He looked quite slow, but then he kind of turned it round and he looked as good as he's looked in the last few years. But he did confirm afterwards that's it. You know, he's got a lot going on outside the ring.
But you don't think because he looked good, he's going to keep going?
I'm not sure. I don't know. I think if they wanted to make a Floyd Mayweather rematch, that would entice him back. And I think it probably would entice Mayweather back, given the money on the table. But it's the whole negotiation period that I suspect both camps can't be doing with.
You don't think we're going to get Mayweather-Pacquiao 2 this year? We're quite busy this year.
I don't think it will happen this year. You could say it's an outside shot for early next year. But I'd be astonished. And there's also a part of me that thinks, you know what? What a perfect way to go out, Manny Pacquiao. He just defeated Timothy Bradley. Okay, he's beaten him before. He had that controversial decision with him in the first fight. Then he beat him convincingly in the second. He's beaten him again. But Bradley's still, you know, quality operator. Pacquiao went out, scored two knockdowns along the way. And it was the perfect goodbye, if it is a goodbye. I would still say that you will see Manny Pacquiao in a ring again at some point. If that does happen, though, I hope it happens sooner rather than later, and we don't get him coming back when he's 41, 42, because there'll still be a lot of interest just because it's Manny Pacquiao, but I suspect by then he'll be looking absolutely dreadful, and I wouldn't want to see that with Manny Pacquiao, to be honest. He goes down in history, surely, as one of the greatest. I'm not saying he's top five, maybe not even top ten, but he certainly goes down in history as one of the greatest. Would you agree?
Yeah, he's just had an amazing career. When you think of all the fights, all the battles, all the wars, the the names on his record are just, it's something else. It's almost like the Mayweather fight last year has tarnished it to a degree, and that even though it was such a big event and so long, you know, so anticipated, Pacquiao sort of lost pretty tamely to him in the end. But if you just look past that, his track record is, it's something else. It's unbelievable. You know, he's fought better people than Floyd Mayweather, hasn't he? He's just not as good a boxer.
I think if you to, I mean, you've obviously got the whole, the fact that Mayweather probably won 8 of 12 rounds, clearly, in that fight. But if you take that fight out of it and you put their records next to each other, irrespective of the losses that Pacquiao's got, I agree. You can certainly make a strong case for the names that Pacquiao has beaten are stronger than the names that Mayweather's beaten.
Yeah.
Certainly the body of work.
So, and you forget about, you know, the number of titles and the number of weight classes these legends win. What you remember is the fights they've had, and Pacquiao's, you know, will go down in the history of the sport.
I think a lot of people focus on Pacquiao's kind of glory days as being, you know, the moment when he kind of did take up that rising weight and he did go through the likes of Oscar De La Hoya, and there was that frightening knockout of Ricky Hatton, and then there was that absolutely stunning performance against Miguel Cotto, which, given what Cotto has achieved since, really, really puts that on quite some pedestal. But if you go back even then, kind of his grand entrance, really, for my mind, was when he beat a still very, very, very good Marco Antonio Barrera, I think in 2003. And the way that he beat him was something else. And people have almost forget about that stage of his career when he was on his way up, when he first kind of moved over to Freddie Roach at the turn of the century. Yeah, and some of the guys he was beating then was just incredible.
Yeah, exactly. There's that period of his career, then there's racing up through the weights, and then the sort of ending with, you know, I know he lost in the end to Marquez, but the rivalry with Marquez, the Bradley fights, and Mayweather as a sort of final chapter.
Eric Morales chapter. As well.
Yeah,
Eric
from
Morales,
the early days.
You know. Yes, it was a fantastic career, and I think I tweeted something that kind of watching him walk into the ring with that smile on his face and everything else. It was, you know, boxing fan or like us, lucky enough to be so heavily involved in his career, and he's quite difficult not to root for, wasn't he? Very, very likable, genuine guy outside the ring.
Turned a little bit evil just before the end.
Do you know what? That was what I was about to talk about. That's about what I was about to talk about. Yeah, how much will that tarnish his reputation? Kind of those comments that he made at the end, which were regrettable.
Yeah. Oh yeah, they were. Yeah, you got to condemn the kind of things he was saying, but you know, those kind of outbursts haven't characterised his whole career. Who knows why he's gone a little bit mad now. But I think boxing fans will focus on the boxing and on the fights. It's probably harmed his standing outside, you know, for the more like casual sports audience that's sort of like a good egg to be a good egg, etc. But I think when you look back on him, you remember these great fights and not his mad social media statements.
Yeah, let's hope so. Let's hope so.
Okay. He just shouldn't have said it in the first place.
No, and you kind of wonder. You just wonder what goes through people's minds when they do these things. You really do.
And it's almost worse because, you know, when Pacquiao says it, because he's so influential, he's a politician running for office, so he should know that his words carry weight in, you know, in his own society and more broadly. So it's kind of more, it's harder to forgive that, whereas like Tyson Fury says a lot of pretty crazy things, but he lots says whatever happens to pop into his brain at any given time, and he's not exactly consistent with whatever it is his views are, and he's sort of he's apologised for various things that burst out of his mouth and mind. so like Tyson Fury is sort of more forgivable for being a crazy guy, because he's not, you know, he's not yet the mayor of Morecambe.
Not yet.
Whereas Manny Pacquiao is actually running to be a senator in the Philippines.
But there was something quite nice, I thought, about the fact that Pacquiao, after Conor Knight quite rightly had stripped him of their sponsorship, that he went into the ring wearing Nike boots. So I think that says that Nike boxing boots are probably pretty good. Because he could have just thought, sod it, I'm going to wear something else.
He could have done.
But he obviously thinks, well, actually, these are the best.
Maybe, yeah, that's a good point.
So in a way, he was giving him a real, real solid bit of advertising there.
He was. What a good guy. Joshua's Under Armour boots look quite good.
The ankle boots.
Yeah, they were quite high cut, weren't they?
Yeah.
They look quite good. Made me wonder if, maybe he's planning to move around more that fight. Up on his toes, high cut boots.
What, Josh?
Yeah.
Yeah, didn't need to though, did he?
Just sat there and waited for Charles Martin to
to kind of do what everybody said he was going to do. Yeah. Okay, so let's move on to what's coming up this weekend.
Oh, blimey.
Gennady Golovkin against Dominic Wade, which you know, I'm finding about as exciting as Joshua Brazil. In all honesty, I think someone mentioned it. I think it was our advertising guy was talking to me about Golovkin Wade, and I said if Wade was to win this, it would be one of the biggest boxing upsets ever.
Yeah, he's a massive underdog.
He's a huge underdog, absolutely huge, and rightly so. Golovkin kind of merrily going about his business.
But Golovkin's always watchable.
He is always watchable. The fact that Golovkin is fighting someone like Dominic Wade, there's two, again, as the very are with many things, two ways to look at it. One.
You're so wise. You're like a little Buddha.
One is that he's clearing out the division, fighting everybody available. And everybody that's willing to face him. The other is that the quality around today is poor. If someone like Gennady Golovkin, who really is internationally arguably the biggest star in the sport, arguably, or he's someone who's seen to be on the way up, ready to take over the sport, and he's fighting someone like Dominic Wade. What does that say about the sport, John?
I see what you're saying, in that why someone like Dominic Wade, his mandatory challenger that Golovkin's got to fight to keep on to his IBF belt, and he wants to hold on to all the belts because he wants to hold on to the belts he's got because he wants to unify them all. But there are a lot more appealing people that he could fight. You know, the Canelo fight is languishing. The Billy Joe Saunders fight hasn't happened, and there are reasons for neither of them having happened. But then, you know, Golovkin could also step up to super middleweight, and there are plenty of big names and big fights for him to have up there. There are good people for him to fight. If he went up to, I know he's small, but if he went up to light heavyweight, beat most of them, so why would he hesitate going to super middle? Golovkin to Gale would be great. That would be a big fight.
You know, he's just turned 34 years old, Gennady Golovkin. Logic would tell us that he's either at his peak or he could even be past it at that age. Is there a danger that Gennady Golovkin, who has all the skills to be one of the finest champions we've seen in a while, can go through his career without a defining fight, or when the defining fight arrives, he's too old to make the most of himself?
Yeah, I think he's already running out of time. You know, 33, 34, it's old for a sportsman. But I think these are problems with getting his defining fight in that he kind of needs Canelo Alvarez. He needs that fight more than Canelo does because Canelo's got plenty of time. He doesn't need to rush. And Canelo is sort of a big name in his own right. That's why I'd argue that Golovkin isn't famous enough for the fights he really needs and wants. He's not like a household name yet, and he's really got to go. I know he is trying to hunt these guys down, like Golovkin and like Billy Joe. Sorry, like Canelo and like Billy Joe. But he's just running out of time. He's going to have, you know, I think sooner or later, if he can't get this middleweight super fight, he's going to have to go up super middle and have a huge fight and have a big fight there. And he'll probably get one there. You know, De Gales would fight him for the right price.
If, I mean, he's going to win this weekend, isn't he?
Yep.
He's going to win this weekend.
That could be my catchphrase. Yep.
No. Not for use in the podcast, or when you're anywhere near me. So Golovkin's going to win. Let's say, for argument's sake, that Canelo wins and wins convincingly. That then becomes, you know, already it's the fight that kind of the hardcore boxing fan would put at the top of their list.
Yeah,
as what they want to see. But so. If Canelo beats Khan convincingly, then it's going to be just going to draw in more of the sporting fans. That's what people are going to want to see. Do you think that is what will happen?
That it would end up with Golovkin fighting Canelo in September or whatever?
Yes.
It's a possibility, but as it goes on, I'm not convinced it's a probability in a way that... after Canelo beat Cotto, I already felt Golovkin Canelo was imminent. You know, I thought they would take a tune-up fight early of this year and then fight each other in the summer. Now that window is sort of past. Canelo's promoter, Oscar De La Hoya, is saying he wants it to be the biggest fight ever. Therefore, he's sounding like he wants to wait. And the problem is when these wait, you know, he can be waiting 5 years, like for Mayweather Pacquiao, which was even bigger, you know, even bigger than Canelo Golovkin.
Of course,
would be.
Yeah.
So you could end up waiting too long, which is fine for Canelo because he's only 25, and anyone he fights is going to be a big fight. And he's fighting a welterweight, and it's still big, but it's not fine for Golovkin because he's 33.
And it's not fine for boxing, is it? It's not fine for boxing if we're forced to wait for the one fight we want.
Yeah, if Canelo had said, I'm a light middleweight, therefore I'm not moving up to middleweight, fine, but you shouldn't be a WBC middleweight champion and only have to fight 155 pounds.
I've said it before here that, you know, I was out for the Canelo-Cotto fight, and in the kind of the De La Hoya addressed the media while Canelo was putting his suit on and getting himself cleaned up after the fight. So Canelo's oblivious to what De La Hoya was saying, and De La Hoya was not remotely convincing that he wanted any part of Golovkin for Canelo. And then moments later, Canelo comes out and declares that he wants to fight at 160 pounds. He wants Golovkin. And you just wonder, I mean, there could potentially be a conflict there. I wholeheartedly, 100% believe that Canelo wants to fight Golovkin. I also wholeheartedly believed that De La Hoya doesn't want him to.
Yeah. But you can make it, you know, they can make more money not rushing towards Golovkin. And they can let, like, in terms of his, Canelo's handlers, and all the while, Canelo's only going to be getting older and older. But yeah, Canelo strikes me as being fearless. And after the he did a press conference in London with Amir Khan and did a round table, and he was sort of quite happy to talk about Golovkin and didn't give any indication that he was going to that he wanted to swerve the fight. But he was quite clear that he's the main man now. he's made concessions before in his career and he doesn't want to make concessions again. So I don't know what those would be, whether it would be about the weight or the financial split or whatever.
I just think it'd be a crying shame. I think it'd be a crying shame, and I don't think... I mean, I think that in this country, boxing is in a wonderful state.
Yeah.
It really is. I think it's. I think the fact that there's so many shows going on, we've got... And OK, so you can say what you like about the amount of titles on offer, but there's a lot of legitimate... There's a lot of fighters that are holding legitimate belts that have come from this country. I think, and with Joshua, with Tyson Fury, David Hayes come back up at heavyweight, kind of the banner division, really, really flying the flag for the sport in this country. But there does seem to be some issues internationally. In America, for so long, kind of the biggest nation in boxing, are really struggling to produce super fights.
Yeah, why is Deontay Wilder having to go to Russia?
Exactly.
I don't feel like it's a big fight, but he's fought in Alabama a couple of times.
Yeah.
I just stretched out Alabama, but it's not a boxing hotbed.
Yeah.
And now he's off to Moscow, so he's not like being built stateside, which is a bit of a shame, because I'd like Deontay Wilder to be a big, you know, become a big star in America, or become an even bigger star in America, let's say, and then when he fights one of these Brits, whether it's Fury or Joshua or David Hay, you know, then that's a massive global fight. It's all a bit strange. And yeah, the worrying thing about Canelo Triple G is that, yeah, we want the best to fight the best, but we want them at their best, as in we want them fighting in their prime.
Exactly.
And then, you know, and so Canelo Golovkin could go off the boil in the same way, sadly, Mayweather Pacquiao did. And, you know, in that sense, I'm quite happy to wait for Fury Joshua to happen, because they're, you know, both Fury and Joshua are pretty young. Obviously, Fury's at the top of the tree. I think Joshua's going to get better and better. If we have to wait a while for that, the build-up will be great. Joshua will be an improving fighter, and it should be a better fight at the end of it.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, we got 10 years of Fury Joshua on the scene. Maybe they'll fight. You know, wouldn't imagine if they could fight three times within it, if that fight wasn't rushed. But on the flip side, you don't want to leave Canelo, you know, it'll be such a shame if Canelo Golovkin didn't happen, because as great as Golovkin is, Canelo seems fearless, and he might just be the guy who can give Golovkin a fight in a way no one else has.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's the biggest thing, is that it would be after Mayweather Pacquiao, which, although we're all absolutely delighted when that was eventually signed and sealed, I think even its biggest supporters would have admitted beforehand that the fight was, that should have happened several years before.
Yeah, and imagine if they had fought three times, how big
they could have done. And they could have done at the point when the negotiations started, they could have had a three-fight rivalry. And, you know, we haven't had that for such a long time. You know, I see so much and read so much about the fact that, you know, back in the day, boxing was so much better. I don't necessarily believe that the fighters were that much better, but certainly the fights were better, if you see where I'm going with that.
Yeah.
The best would fight the best. You wouldn't. I'm not saying there was never any kind of, for want of a better word, gimme defences like what Golovkin's got this coming weekend, that, you know, you'd always have those throughout history, strewn with those kind of fights. But at the end of those periods where people are fighting people that are quite inferior to them, they're then fighting someone at their level, and you'd have these great fights that would kind of, you know, hold the sport together. And I feel that hasn't got that in America at the moment. And the biggest lesson was the fact that Mayweather and Pacquiao, you can't say it bombed when it took as much money as it did. It's the richest fight in history. But it doesn't look good when the richest fight in history is that kind of fight, and that they're both past their best.